Welcome to Thousand Hills Ranch Church. We're excited for you to hear this message, and we hope it blesses your life.
How are you guys? Good to see you guys. Good to be back. We called this church home 4 or 5 years ago. Life's taken a few curves since then and given us two knuckleheads that we're chasing, and they'll be around here somewhere. We shipped them off to go sort pins, so we didn't have to joke with them. I'm Jason. This is Alyssa. We'll kind of talk more about our story. I'll be honest with you, neither one of us are big crowded people person. We're not speakers, but God's given us an adventure, to say the least, for the past year that we're wanting to share with you. Before we get started, kind of what I want to do is Alyssa will share kind of the perspective of kind of watching my accident happen and a different side of mine, and then I'll kind of get into the more of my story. But as we were doing praise and worship, we can stand up and tell you, if God is for us, nothing can be against us. And that rings pretty big, because it wasn't very many months ago I would have looked coming into this cell barn and thought, man, how do I get up these stairs? And I was able to go up and down them 4 or 5 times and chase some donuts with the little boys, and stairs aren't that big of a mountain anymore. And we've all got mountains we'll get into. So we're going to watch a video, and then we'll kind of share a little bit of our story.
Well, there's always been groups of people that never could see eye to eye. But I always thought if they ever had a chance to sit down and talk face to face, they might realize they got a lot in common. Well, I was sitting in a coffee shop, just having a cup to pass the time, swapping rodeo stories with this old cowboy friend of mine, when some motorcycle riders started snickering in the back and started poking fun at my friend's hat. And one old boy said, "Hey, Tex, where'd you park your horse?" My friend just pulled his hat down low, but they couldn't be ignored. One husky fella said, "I'm going to rip that hat right off." Take this cowboy's hat. Now, partner, this old hat's better left alone. See, it used to be my daddy's, but last year he passed on. My nephew skinned the rattler that makes up this old hat band. But back in 69, he died in Vietnam. Now, the eagle feather was given to me by an Indian friend of mine. But someone ran him down somewhere around that Arizona line. And a real special lady gave me this hat pin. But I don't know if I'll ever see her again. You'll ride a black tornado across the western sky. Rope an old blue norther and milk it till it's dry. Bulldog the Mississippi. Ears down flat long before you take this cowboy's hat. Now, if your leather jacket means to you what this hat means to me, then I guess we understand each other and we'll just let it be. But if you still think it's funny, man, you got my back up against the wall, and if you touch my hat, you're gonna have to fight us all. Right then, I caught a little sadness in that gang leader's eyes. And he turned back to the others, and they all just kind of shuffled on outside. But when my friend turned back towards me, I noticed his old hat brim, well, it was turned up in a big old Texas grin. You'll ride a black tornado. Take this cowboy's hat.
What a difference a year makes, huh? I'm going to step down here so I don't back off backwards. Thank you for having us. This is, like you said, this is kind of stepping outside of our comfort zones, but we feel like it's something that God has called us to do through this last year, and that's to get out and share our story. And, you know, Jason was asked the very first time to come share it, and we talked about it, and we thought, you know, he can share his story, and he can help anyone that's in his situation, and then I can come and I can help those that are the spouse or the partner or whatnot. So if any of you have any questions or want to talk about anything, or if you just need somebody to lean on after today, come find us. We would love to talk to you. We can talk to you from the different perspectives, and we feel that's what we're here to do now, is to help others through this. So I'm going to kind of give you an idea of what we were doing that day and what got us into this. And then Jason's going to kind of walk you through the rest of it. But it's still kind of hard to watch some of those videos to remember where we were just a short time ago, even though a year really isn't always a short time. But we used to get up every morning, and I would go for my morning run, and we're always trying to find more time where it's just us, when, you know, the boys aren't running us all over the countryside. So we thought, well, when I get up in the mornings and go run, Jason could go run with me, and we had that little bit of time. We do it before they wake up. And so we'd go half mile down, half mile back, then we'd be in front of the house, and then another half mile down and half mile back. That way we could continually check on them. If they woke up, they knew they'd just hang out on the porch or play in the front yard, and they knew what we were doing. But he did that with me one time. He ran with me one time, and he said, I'm not doing this anymore. Exercise is not his friend. So he said, I'll just ride a colt beside you. Well, okay. I'm not very fast, so it'll be a slow trot, but it worked. We did it. Oh, with that horse, he'd probably ridden with me for a good month and a half, so the horse knew the trail, and it was a different July morning. It was kind of like a morning we're having now in the summertime. We got up, and I looked to the south, and I said, you know, it looks like it's raining in Woodward, and it's pretty cool this morning. There's a little nice breeze. And so then we kind of just took off on our normal morning, and we got down to our halfway mark, or our half-mile mark, to turn around. And I turned around, and he usually makes a circle or two. He's, like I said, I'm not very fast, so he has to do a few things to not just leave me behind. But I just, you know, I the normal clicking of a horse running down a road, that's what you just hear. And I heard him doing some circles. And then I heard the steps get a little bit faster. And as I turned, I heard I heard him say, whoa. And I turned. And as I turned, I saw the horse take three steps, and then they both just disappeared. And that drainage ditch that they fell into was about 10 foot deep, probably, I'm guessing. But the Johnson grass was probably 12 to 13 feet. So it looked like the ditch was pretty level. So when they fell in, I just saw Jason in his mind was trying to come off the horse because he didn't want it to fall and roll. So Jason went down, and then right beside him, Chavez went down, and I lost him in the grass, and I just heard a thud, and I heard Jason kind of let out some air, and he just went, oh. And so I ran over to the side, and I hollered for him to kind of get an idea of where he was, because I still couldn't see him. I could see the top of the horse, like his ears, and it was kind of odd. As I think back, it's like that Johnson grass was almost like a netting, because I can still see that horse falling. But the horse never fell. He stayed on his feet. He went down a little bit, and then he just came back, and he just froze, which was a blessing in itself. And so I figured out where Jason was just by his voice, because he said he was waving his hat, but I couldn't see it. So I tried to find a way I could get down in there. And in my mind, if you don't know me, I'm pretty type A. I always have a plan, have a backup plan, and a backup to a backup plan. And after I became a mother, I hate it, but you always think of the worst case scenarios, and then you figure out what you're going to do in those scenarios in case they ever happen. So I thought, okay, well, I need to get in. I've got to get in there and get that horse out so it doesn't stomp on Jason. And then we'll take the next step after that. So I found a way I could get down in there, and I had to jump straight down and then come back towards him. But that horse never moved. I talked to it all the way through the grass so it wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't spook or anything. And I walked over to Jason and I said, are you all right? And he just kind of said, yeah. And I said, can you move? And he moved his right leg a little bit. And I said, okay, now don't move. Don't move at all. I'm getting the horse out and I'm going to Betty's. Well, half mile down the road, the other halfway mark, is our neighbor, Betty. And it's her and her sister, and they're both mid-90s. And they have two nurses that are at their house 24/7. They shift on the 7s. So I've always told myself, if anything were to happen, go get the nurse at Betty's. And so I got the horse, and I got him up out of the ditch, and he just went, just slick as a whistle, jumped right up out of the ditch. And then I crawled out, and I ran him back to the house and tied him up, and then I went in the house to make sure the boys were still sleeping, and they were. And so I grabbed our phones, which we didn't have with us, and I got in the Jeep, and I headed to Betty's to get the nurse. And I knocked on the front door and the back door and the front door, and I didn't call 911 immediately, because if you call 911, your phone is tied up. I mean, they will stay on that phone with you until the ambulance arrives. So I thought, okay, I have to get some other calls in before I call 911, but I need to call 911. So when I got the nurse, she called 911 for me. So then I called my brother, who lives 7 miles down the road, and I said, Jason's been in an accident. You have to come now. And this was at about 6:20. And my brother does not ever answer his phone that early in the morning, ever. But he answered on the third ring. And so he was immediately there, and the nurse was there, and I just said, if you guys can stay in the ditch with him, I have to go back to the house for the boys. So I went back to the house, and the boys were awake at that point. They were just standing on the porch, and I said, boys, Daddy's been hurt, but he's going to be all right. Let's go sit in the Jeep. We're going to wait for the ambulance to come get Daddy. And so, you know, they were kind of intrigued, I guess, by it. They weren't really scared yet because they hadn't seen Daddy. They didn't really know much. They just thought it was pretty cool that Daddy was going to get to ride in an ambulance. And so to get the ambulance to our house was a battle in itself. They couldn't find us. You know, we live out there, even with the 911 numbers, they couldn't find us. I asked the dispatcher if she knew where Alabaster Caverns was. She said, no. I said, do you know where the Selman Bat Labs are? No. I said, do you know where Freedom is? Well, yeah, it's North Moreland. I said, well, okay. Can I talk to somebody who knows where anything is? No, I didn't say that. I thought that. But we finally got it figured out. And so Freedom came and Woodward came. But Woodward didn't know they could come up the back way, up 34, which would have saved some time. They went all the way around to Moreland, which we then told them afterwards when they were leaving, the shortcut. And so we got him there, and they had tried to send the helicopter, but because of the rain in Woodward, they couldn't get clearing to go. So they were going to have to load him up and drive him all the way to either the city or Enid. And so we got him in the ambulance, and they said, where are we going? And we said, well, I'm guessing the city for OU Med. And they said, well, I don't think Jason can make it that far. So we said, well, I guess Enid is our next option. And we said, well, probably St. Mary's. So they called St. Mary's, and the neurosurgeon there was already in surgery and was not going to be out of surgery soon enough to start Jason's surgery. And I said, well, the only other place to go in Enid is Bass. So we went to Bass, and Jason will get into all of that. Hand of God laying out for us with that. Just goes to show that even though we have plans, backup plans, and backup to backup plans, it's not our plan. It's in God's hands, and he's going to take care of it. And I think for me, this was one way he proved it to me, that it doesn't matter what I have planned. His plan's going to trump that, and it's going to be for the better. But anyway, with Freedom being a volunteer ambulance and fire department, we can't have meds, or they can't administer meds. So from 6:30 to 9:30, when we finally got him on the helicopter to go to Enid, he had no painkillers. And so it was pretty rough. pretty rough ride going down our roads in the ambulance. At one point, he said, I think it would have been better if you would have just got my flatbed and strapped me to it and pulled me down this road. He said, I think it'd be a lot smoother. But anyway, then we got to Enid, and on the way to Enid, I got a call from the hospital, and they said, we're thinking that it's maybe a ruptured disc. That would have been fantastic, but it wasn't. And by the time we got there, things had gotten pretty dark. And then the science part of it all greeted us at the door and said, you know, this is really bad. There's not a lot of hope for him. One, if he survives surgery, it's going to be not very good. If he does survive surgery, he's going to have a lot of surgeries in his life. There's not a lot of hope for anything else for him to do other than maybe live out of a chair. And so I'm processing all of this, and when the surgeon told us that, I just said, I need you to step out. I need to talk to my husband. And so I looked at Jason, and I said, what are we going to do? He's like, get into surgery. We got to get this done and get started. So I was like, there's a little more to it than that. And he had already decided, you know, it was his decision. I mean, it was our decision, but it was his decision. And he had already gone past the surgery to the getting better. And I was thinking, we got to get out of surgery. I mean, what do I tell Sander and Strand if the doctor's right and Daddy doesn't come out of the last door that they walked out of? And so he went to surgery. We walked him up there, and 6.5 hours later, the surgeon came out, and he asked to talk to us. And our pastor had shown up. His childhood pastor had shown up. All of my family was there. His family was there. We just had wonderful, wonderful support. I had wonderful support during those 6.5 hours in that waiting room, and I had a lot of time to think about things, and again, I was trying to take care of everyone else, and God just kept pulling it away and saying, it's not, you have your village. I have sent you a village to take care of you, and I finally had to realize that, you know, I didn't have to take care of everybody in that room. God was going to do it. He was going to utilize each of those people in our lives to help us no matter what happened with that surgery. And so the surgeon came out, and I went back to talk to him, and thankfully our mothers wouldn't let me go by myself. And we went in there, and he said, he must be a very good man. He must have done good in his life to have survived this surgery. And he said, he's going to have to lay very still, because if he messes up the point where I fixed the spinal cord, he will die. If it breaks, he will die. Then he said, if he gets a blood clot, he will die. Everything was, he will die, he will die, he will die. That's all I heard for about 30 minutes was, if he does this, it's just done. And, you know, after so much of that, you're trying so hard to keep your head above water. And so then after he left, my dad and Jason's dad came in, and we started explaining to them what we were told. And it wasn't until recently I sit back and I think about the way God plans out our lives. And two of the pastors that came to see us that don't know each other, didn't cross paths, they both told us, they said, you know, God wasn't surprised by this. It's not that he planned this for you, but he wasn't surprised that this happened. And he knows how he's going to get you through it. And so then I've spent a year looking back at my life, and I think often back to that time that we brought my dad and Jerry in to tell them about the surgery. And for those of you that don't know, my dad is an amputee, and he's been an amputee for 43 years. And 40 years ago, he got to be my dad. And all my life, I grew up with someone who did not have a part of his leg. I'd get up every morning, watch him put his leg on. At night, I'd watch him take his leg off. Wasn't anything out of the ordinary for me. It didn't really limit him to the life I knew. He still rode horses. We worked cattle. He's a rancher. You know, there were some things he did different. He gets on a horse on the different side. But, you know, it wasn't like a handicap. It wasn't ever anything ever in my childhood that I thought, how are we going to do this because of Dad's leg? So in ways, I've looked back and I looked at my dad that night, and I know it brought so much anxiety back for him and so much of what he went through came back through what Jason's accident has done. And that night I couldn't see his eyes because he sat there in his chair like this, and he had his cowboy hat on, and I could only see his face. And I was thinking out loud to myself, telling them what we had to do for Jason, no matter what happened, if he was in a chair forever. I thought of the things that my dad needed my entire life. He needed his dignity. He needed us to not feel sorry for him. He needed us to encourage him and to accept him for whatever he could and couldn't do. And so as I'm sitting there, I'm telling them, I'm like, okay, we have to do this for Jason. We have to do this. We have to make this happen. And my dad would just shake his head like, I know. And I know that God prepared me through my dad now, all these years later, for what we've encountered this past year. And Dad and Jason have had lots and lots of good long talks about it. And I think it's done a lot of healing for my dad. He said if they had had something like Jim Thorpe back when he lost his leg, it would have done a world of good for him. The counseling side of it would have done a world of good for him. So, you know, sometimes we have to be used in ways that are very uncomfortable. Sometimes we have to lose things just to help others that haven't had that lifeline extended to them. And I have this little devotion that I read every day, and I just flip it over, and I've used it for 3 or 4 years. And I got back to July 27th this year. And I would have read it that morning, but it said, hope is a golden cord from heaven. And we just have to hang on to that cord. That cord will always hang from heaven because God will never, ever take that cord away. He will never let go. So he doesn't want us to let go. The most important thing in your life you can keep is your hope. Hope will just take you so far. It'll take you places you never, ever thought you could go. Just don't let go. It is a golden cord. It is priceless what that one little extension that God gives us can do for us. And I just thought, you know, again, God laid that out there on the 1 year anniversary. I would have read about that hope that morning and not thought a lot about it, but this year on that morning, I thought, you know what? That cord was hanging last year for me. And I didn't, maybe not consciously, but I took a hold of that cord and I have not let go. And it has carried us so far. And then I got this in the hospital, and then I'll finish and let Jason talk. But it says, there is no testing, no trouble, no circumstance that can ever touch me until, first of all, it has gone past the Father, past Christ Jesus, and then right to me. If it has gone that far, it has come with great purpose. So don't panic, but lift your eyes to him and accept it as coming from the throne of God. He will always build us. He will always strengthen us. And he will never give us something that he is not going to be there with that cord to help us through.
If you know me, I'm a pretty simple fella. I'm not very emotional, and I do not read books. Someone brought me this book a day or two after I got hurt, and I just started reading it maybe a month ago, but the front of it says, bounce back stronger no matter what knocks you down. And it talks about resilient faith. I've read this book, and it's got some stuff, and I'm going to share some out of it. But July 27th of last year, I was diagnosed as a paraplegic incomplete, told without no hope whatsoever, I would never walk, I would never poop, and I would never pee again, and some other things. And the surgeon looked me in the eye. The biggest blessing I've had in this journey is I wasn't smart enough to believe the doctor. He ticked me off, is what he did. I don't say that out of me. It's not a me thing. I've learned how weak I am this past year. Laying in that ditch, and Sheila, if you'll pull up some pictures, I'm going to show you some pictures of my back just to give it a perspective. This is what I am now, and that's from about all about here in my ribs to my tailbone is full of iron and screws. If you'll go to another one, this is my back, and if you see the river, it kind of looks like the White Cimarron River. Through the middle of it, about halfway up, a black line. That's the equivalent of the spine, or an extension cord that goes from your head to your feet. And anywhere there is a black line within that white, you are paralyzed from that point down. And if you know, that's my L3 is where that black line is. And I shattered my L3 when I hit the ground. They called it a burst fracture. So it blew into pieces. And when it blew into pieces, it punctured the dura, which is the white that goes up and down. And I'm speaking a bunch of words that don't make a lot of sense to me other than that's what the doctors told me. But the dura looks like the river. And that's all the nerves that control your brain to your feet. And when it's cut, power's cut. That's where the doctor looked at it and said there is zero hope that anything will be done at that point. And just a little bit below that's called the cauda equina, the tail of the horse. I can remember the tail of the horse. The other words are too big for me. But it looks like a bunch of spaghetti that goes to your bowel function, your bladder function, you moving, you sweating, that type of stuff. And for three or four weeks, I lost my bowels. I lost my bladder. I didn't sweat. I didn't do any of that. I lost all movement to my from here down. But again, I wasn't smart enough to believe the doctors. My plan in the hospital in Enid was to live. My plan when I got to Jim Thorpe was to, let me scratch that. The doctor's plans in Enid was for me to live. The doctor's plans in Jim Thorpe was for me to learn to live out of a chair. And from day one, they told me I was going to have to practice to learn to live out of a chair and practice to learn to fall out of a chair. And I'll get into a little more of this. And from day one, they actually ordered me psychologicals is what my surgeon said because they thought I was crazy in the head. And that's not made up. He actually left my room and told my mother-in-law and my sister, this guy's not right in the head. But I also told him, and he came back right before I left, and I'm going to jump back a little bit, but I told him, God bless me to be full of piss and vinegar and serve a good God. He didn't understand that at that point. That where I had the piece from, but he was looking at the science end of this picture, and there is zero hope, because if there's a black line through it, it took him 2.5 hours. He saw it. I've never seen my back. I've never seen my dura. He spent 2.5 hours with his hands on me, sewing it up. And when he talked to me, it was equivalent in my mind of welding a hole in a pop can. And, I mean, in any of us that weld a hole in a pop can, don't expect for it to hold. So I got what he said. It held. My last surgery that I've had for this deal was July 27th of last year. And he told me I would be in a long string of surgeries, and he told me I would be on a long line of medicine. And the only medicine I'm on today is a vitamin if Alyssa catches me before I leave. I am on no pain medicine. I am on nothing, and that's not because of me. That's only by the grace of God. But to go back, they came in before Alyssa was there and told me it's probably a slip disc, and I don't know the doctor's name. He was a really nice gentleman and said, I'm like, all right, sounds good. I took that news about as good as I took a broken back because at that point I didn't really care what it was. I had a blowtorch that someone had stuck right here, and it was blowing to both of my feet is what it felt like. But to jump back a little bit farther than that, our focus and our journey has been on Jason's broke his back. That's not the biggest miracle in this deal. That's a big miracle, and I don't want to take away from it. But at 6:10 that morning, I've never had the world and a horse fall out from under me like that did. But when he stepped off the road, I knew I was in a bind because we'd built fence there. And we came off the road, and I saw his left foot cross a little gravel path that the grader leaves on the side of the road, and I knew it dropped into a hole. And so he stepped off, and at that point I knew I needed to bail, so I tried to step off to the right side. And as I did, he just moved away and fell out from under me, and I free fell. And I remember falling, the Johnson grass hitting me, and thinking, man, I didn't know a white man could hit the ground this hard. I ended up twisting backwards, landing on my left rear cheek, and then remember my spurs above my head before it slammed me back down. And that's where Alyssa heard me go, ugh. And when everything came, dust settled, I didn't lose consciousness. I was still there, but I could reach up and grab my horse's stirrup. His foot was right here by my head. So I was worried about him stepping on me, and I was worried about rattlesnakes, because we've got some big rattlesnakes where we live. The horse didn't step on me. We didn't have any rattlesnakes. The worst thing I had to deal with at that point is I was laying in the middle of a red ant den. I didn't know it at that point. The nurses freaked out because they thought I was getting bed sores, and luckily it was anandites. But Alyssa jumped down, and to put it a little in perspective, the day of my anniversary, my oldest boy wanted to go down to where I broke my back, and I'm like, all right, we'll go down there. So we jumped on the four-wheeler, and we got about 30 yards driving down the ditch because it gradually just gets deeper and deeper and deeper. We got 30 yards from where I broke my back, and I couldn't get it. In four-wheel drive and the four-wheeler, I couldn't get down there. The Johnson grass was thick enough, and it just kind of stepped, dropping where we go. So Sanders like, this is close enough. I understand, Daddy. And we backed back out. But it puts things in perspective for them to strap me to a board, and then they put me above their head and walked me down the ditch and slid me out. It just put things in perspective. If God, all I could think is they're going to drop me. They're going to drop me. They're going to drop me. And if they would drop me, I don't know what would have happened, but it would just add, it would have been bad. But even a step back, a step before that, to where I was going is, I laid in that ditch after Alyssa got Chavez out of the ditch. And I knew I was hurt, but it never crossed my mind. You're paralyzed. You've broke your back. But the only prayer I had was, God, whatever it is, I'll accept it. And I truly believe I was dying at that point. And again, I'm not an emotional person, but from the medical side, he's like, you shouldn't have come out of the ditch. But God saved me at that point. He gave me a peace because I laid there for 45 minutes before anyone showed up. One of the nurses, Alyssa, got down there, and then her brother showed up, and then everyone showed up. But he gave me a peace. And my brother-in-law asked, he's like, did you screw up your head because you weren't freaking out? You weren't screaming. And I'm like, no, I just, screaming's not gonna, that's not me, but it's not gonna help. And I was really worried. The people around me were freaking out because they knew I was really messed up. And I instantly lost my left leg from here down. There was no feeling. My right leg I lost when they log rolled me to strap me down on the board. And at that point I knew we were in pretty serious shape. Jump it up a little bit. We get to the hospital. My surgeon was Hindu. To kind of put a little more of what Alyssa said is he was a good man. You do good. You're blessed, that type of stuff. He did not believe in God. And he looked at me and he said, by science, there is no hope. And he did a phenomenal job of putting me back together. He got the screws anchored as good as he could, the rod bent to where it fits my back. He told me, buddy, again, coming out of surgery, he's like, you will go to ICU. You will be there for quite a while. You move, you die. I'd never spent a day in ICU. I came out of surgery 6.5 hours and went to a room, and I think I could flicker my right toe at that point. And that was on a Thursday morning. I can't remember if it was the next morning. Friday morning, I woke up and took Alyssa's hand, and I could wiggle my knee. That quick, things kept going. But he kept telling me, you move, you die, and this type of stuff. So I didn't move till Sunday night. And we were laying there. We were doing nothing because I didn't want to move and die. And he came in with a group of nurses, grabbed me on the, if anyone knows what a log roll is, they grab you on the hip and they grab on the shoulder and they just roll you like a log. They came in, rolled me like a log, and I puckered. I was like, man, all right, I'm going to die. They're moving me. They looked at me and said, your incision looks good. I had 54 staples down my back and two drain tubes that were draining all the blood off my back. Rolled me over, looked at me, said it looks good, rolled me back down, and I think Alyssa might have said, you told us not to move. I didn't, and then they left. That was it. And I looked Alyssa in the eye, and I said, game on. I moved and didn't die. And any of you that were watching our Facebook post, Alyssa's very eloquent and spells things right and gets the words in good grammar. She went to take a shower Monday morning, and I did the Facebook post. And I said, the doctor's fixing to find out what a Hillman is. And I didn't mean that in an arrogant way. God just gave me a fire, and I'm like, all right, here we go. I kind of had the mentality, and we've ranchered quite a bit with Jason Nail, and he always calls me the old man. And I was bound and determined, and he wasn't going to get to the head before me. And it didn't matter if it was, but it was that mentality of the bigger the challenge, the better. So Monday morning before noon, I was in my room by myself because my wife and the neurosurgeon had left my room not speaking to me because the nurse was fighting for me to go to Jim Thorpe. My wife was scared if I move, I die. And my surgeon wanted to send me to skilled nursing. And it sounded like a place I didn't belong. I don't know what skilled nursing is, but I'm like, nothing skilled and nothing nursing sounds like anywhere I want to go. I want to walk. And he's like, well, you're a paraplegic. You're never going to walk again. You're never going to do this. You're never going to do this. And I told him, I refuse your service is basically what it came to. He's like, you're refusing our service. And I, if that's what it takes to get me to Jim Thorpe, that's what I'm going to do. And my wife's like, you're an idiot. I don't know if she told me that nicely or not, but that's where we were at that point. July 27th, I broke my back. That was a Thursday. The next Thursday, they flew me out. They flew me to Jim Thorpe. We spent 4 weeks, just a tick over 4 weeks at Jim Thorpe. And a blessing of that is, if you've ever been in an ambulance ride, it's horrible. I think we drag Kev smoother than an ambulance ride can take you to town. But her mom had been in a wreck a month or two before my accident, and she said, you're getting evac insurance. And I'm like, man, that's dumb. We don't need that. They flew me from Woodward, and we had a 10-minute window to fly me when they got me to Moreland, to Woodward to Enid, and then they flew me from Enid to Jim Thorpe on evac insurance. $100,000 worth of evac services cost us $1,100 for a lifetime membership. That's a big deal that we haven't shared a whole lot that God put in our lives. And they told us also, if I'd have stayed in the ambulance, I wouldn't have had pain medication to Enid, and I'd have been dead by the time I got there. They said I wouldn't have survived just because things were what kept me alive, and God kept a part of my L3 that burst, punctured my dura. It didn't come out. It stayed in there. And from 6:10 when I broke my back till I went into surgery at 1:30 that afternoon. But from that point, I was pretty determined. And I, if you've been around me, you hear me say I use the KISS method. Keep it simple, stupid. Because that fits me. I'm really, really simple. The more black and white, the better. So Satan started jacking with me at that point because he wanted me to die and he didn't kill me. God didn't allow it. He wanted me to stay paralyzed, and God knew he was blessing me physically. We were gaining some stuff back. We had a mountain of people, some of you in this room, that came and visited me. So what Satan started doing is like, all right, Jason, you're going to be paralyzed because you're the weakest link. And that's where I was at. So when I got to Jim Thorpe, some of you came and visited me, but my mind was, I can't rest. I'm going to blow to the gym. And it became the physical therapist joke of stay out of Jason's way. He's going to the gym. So if I could, I mean, every day I tried to get faster and go into the gym. But what really I had to wrap my mind around about 2 weeks into Jim Thorpe is it's not about me. I'm there to get better. But at that point, there was 24, Jim Thorpe Rehab is the first floor is the pool in the gym. Second floor is 24 rooms of spinal cord injuries. Third floor is 24 rooms of head trauma injuries. There was only one room that I knew existed at that point, and that was my room. I was focused on me. And I was being selfish, not in a selfish way, but that's where Satan had my mind kind of clouded of, I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to work hard. I don't care who's in the gym. I just want my physical therapist to work hard. And I actually requested to not work with one lady in particular because I could get her hour's worth of workout done in 20 minutes. And then we'd sit and talk, and I'm like, I'm not here to talk with you. I'm here to get better. My attitude wasn't, I didn't have time to sit and chit-chat with you. But at that point, God kind of, he showed me I was being selfish. And he's like, you know what? Get over yourself. And that's I had to get over myself because there was 24 other rooms that there was people in the hospital that were hurting just like me. And then he also, I locked horns with my doctor up there just a little bit because I wanted more rehab. And I had to go find her on the third floor. And it was really a gut check for me is third floor people were physically hurt and didn't have their minds. They didn't know where they were. They didn't know their family. They didn't know their kids. There was a young family there that he had had some heart issues and had some head trauma, and he didn't remember part of his kids due to that. I came back down with my tail between my legs, and I didn't back off going to the gym any faster, but I really appreciated I could play Legos with my boys. I could throw the ball with them. I could braid picking strings. I could watch cartoons. I knew my boys. I knew my wife. I was okay. If I was paralyzed for the rest of my life, it could be a lot worse. That was a game changer for me. Mentally, we checked in, we videoed, and Alyssa videoed, and she did a phenomenal job on Facebook. But every Monday was my cornerstones. From Monday to Monday, I wanted to see what I was doing to make sure I wasn't the weakest link. And I still don't want to be the weakest link. Lazy is not okay. But what it did is I started making, there was a buddy there that team wrote from Oakwood. That broke his neck checking cows. I was able to meet Chad. And then there was another young man named John that was struggling at that point. He's doing better now, but his parents brought him out and set him on the little putt-putt course next to me. And we were both stuck in our wheelchairs. But he was able to open doors for me to share what I was really there. Because probably up to that point, I never really wondered why. But in the back of my mind, I probably wondered, why in the world did I broke my back? And God's like, you know what? It doesn't matter. Your back's broke. It's not going to be unbroke. So deal with it. And it kind of put to the perspective, we all have our ditch. It doesn't matter what it is. We can't get out of the ditch by ourselves. And about that point, Mark Messenger brought me a steak. And that was the best steak I've ever eaten. I couldn't eat much of it. But it was like one of those things. I was like, I'm tired of being defined by the man that broke his back. I'm tired. I don't want people to feel sorry for me. I don't want to cry. I want to go. I want to go do something. I want to be normal. And I'm still battling that, and I'm going to get to that in a little bit. Of we can define ourselves by the can'ts, or we can just focus on the cans. Because I stand before you today, and my goal is for someone to not know I broke my back unless you know I broke my back. And I think I can pull that off fairly decent. Unless you watch me walk up a pretty steep up or down, then I start. But I'm numb from about this point down. I can't feel my foot. I can't do a lot of those things. And when I get first Brandon I went to, I left really frustrated because I couldn't go grab a calf by the head if they pantyhose it, or I couldn't do this. But my dad kind of told me, he's like, suck it up, Buttercup. He's like, you cut all the bull calves there. You carried the bucket. You didn't get ran over. You didn't get hurt. And you're not sitting in a chair. And by that point, one of my goals that I had reached had hit by that point is they sent me home from Jim Thorpe in a loaner wheelchair. And they told me, they fit me for a chair, and they're like, you're active, you're in the country, that type of stuff. We're going to get you the toughest, best mobile chair you can be. And I told them, I don't need it. And again, they're like, man, this guy is nuts. I never sat in that chair. That chair came, I believe, January 4th. I lied to you. I did sit in that chair. I drove it from the wheelchair store to the car, put it in the car, and then we stopped in Woodward on the way home, and it's still sitting at the rehab where I go because I'm like, I don't want it at home. It's a $13,000 chair. But God bless me is I didn't need it at that point. I was in a wheelchair tick over 4 months when I was told I'm going to be living it the rest of my life. I was in a walker about 30 days. I think, and I was on a cane 40 to 60 days, and today I'm on nothing by the grace of God. And that's pretty overwhelming because still today, I mean, for the rest of my life, I'm diagnosed as a paraplegic. I'm diagnosed as a paralyzed man. But mentally, we can't accept it. It doesn't matter who we are. We all feel paralyzed at some point. We all feel like we've got something going on that's going to cripple us. It doesn't matter. I tell you, what this has done for me is it's simplified things. I don't know, and I don't need you to answer, but I tell you, gaining my bowels and bladder back was better than walking. I don't know any of you that haven't been able to poop or pee for an extended period of time, and I know 3 weeks, looking back on it, it's not that big a time, but I was to the point I pooped and peed pretty good on my own, and I didn't need help, and for 3 weeks, I required help to do it every time, and we scheduled, the bowel program is what it is, and if you were around me, you probably got a black and white version. I know Jason Nell did, the bowel program, and it was horrible, but every night at 9 o'clock before my bowels woke up, whatever nurse was on hand came and helped me poop. In Cowboys, we kind of talked about that dignity, and we're kind of private. We don't want help with that. We don't want help. And to give you a mental picture, and it is not in the slideshow, over my bed was like basically a medical cherry picker, and they had a rainbow-colored sling, not making that up, that they rolled me one side, put half of it on, they rolled me the other side, put me on, and then basically lifted me up like half a slab of beef, slid me over a glorified wheelchair over a trash can, and we began the bowel program. And I came home and I joked, man, I left my dignity hanging at Jim Thorpe. But it gives me a perspective of God blessed me to have my bowels back. Because again, you look at those pictures, that doesn't come back because we cut the power to all that. We cut the power to everything, and everything functions. Yeah, and Alyssa's just telling me, like, I work with Hunter up at the rehab place, and he's like, man, I want to check your reflexes. I have zero reflexes. I don't know if any of you sit and do the old physicals. He hit both knees, and there was nothing. I mean, he might as well have been hitting that wall to check my reflexes. There is nothing. But God's blessed me to where my mind functions. I mean, in some of those videos, it was left, right, left, right, left, right, walk, that type of stuff. When I came home from Jim Thorpe, the next day was my Benefit Ranch rodeo they put on for me. It's the first day I wore jeans. First day, I couldn't touch my feet. I couldn't roll over in bed. I couldn't do anything on my own at that point. We actually had a rattlesnake under the porch that day. And that was one of the things that really, I kind of carry a chip on my shoulder still today. The song, Don't Touch My Cowboy Hat by Chris Ledoux. I carry a chip toward Satan. Because and I think God wants us to. Don't touch our cowboy hat. I mean, that's where my story doesn't change a whole lot. I'm blessed to be walking. But my attitude needs to be the same if I'm walking or not. Our attitude needs to be the same whatever we're doing. It's the mentality if that yearling needs a doctor, we blow to it and we doctor it. If we need help, we ask for help. And a scripture that was on my benefit shirts was Proverbs 16:33. We may throw the dice, but God determines how they fall. And again, my mentality is the bigger the challenge, the better. I want to follow God on that. I've had to bounce up and really pay attention to Proverbs 16:32. Better a patient man than powerful. Better to have self-control than conquer a city. Because the biggest battle I probably fought was, if a cow needs milk in a ranch rodeo, I want to go grab her by the head. Not to compete against anybody else, but I want to do better than I can do. If fence needs to be fixed, let's fix it. If this needs to happen, let's go to it. And when you define ourselves, and I think as rural people, we define ourselves of that, and when you're laying in a bed and you have to ask for help to roll, you can't touch your feet, you can't get out of bed, you can't. For months, I couldn't sit up at the edge of the bed and put deodorant on without Alyssa holding me because I had zero balance. I lost all my balance. So when I'm like, all right, I may not be the best at anything in the world, but I can work as hard as anybody on the planet. And when you can't do anything physically, that messes with you. But someone sent me a picture last week, and it had the word can't, and it says can't, can't. And then it said can't, and it kicked the T off and turned it into a cross, can. And that's where I'm only standing in front of you today, because can't, can't, and I prove that. There's not a thing I could do on my own. But God took a Hindu surgeon that didn't believe in Christ and put an average white guy back together that's supposed to be paralyzed for the rest of his life and have a long line of surgery and to have a long string of medicine to stand in front of you and fight my wife on taking a multivitamin every day. A big victory that I haven't even shared with Alyssa, she saw me do it last night and she freaked out a little bit, as we went to the Freedom Rodeo. She usually, up to this point, we pull up to the house, she carries the boys, and if they're asleep, I was able to pick our three-year-old up. And to put that in perspective, our three-year-old's 54 pounds. But I was able to pick him up, put him on my shoulder, carry him up my ramp into the house, and hand him to Alyssa last night for the first time since I broke my back. To break that down a tickets means I've got the balance, I've got the strength, and my paralyzed leg functioned. And I know that seems really simple, but I want to throw that out there because we can get to be going too fast. Every time I've been able to share my story, it's gotten harder. And this week it dawned on me, why is it getting harder? It's because I'm wanting to share too much. I'm wanting to elaborate too much. I'm wanting to put too much into it and wanting to make it not about me, but I don't. Kind of Satan, I think, is put in my head, as weird as it sounds, is he's like, you need to do better. You need to do more. You need to share this. And there's a lot that's gone on that I can't share all in one speech. But God's kind of kicked me in the gut today and said, you know what, keep it simple. I had a buddy text me right before we started, and he's like, keep it simple and speak bold. That's what we're all called for. And we all take hits. We all take things, and we want to buck up, and we want to do it. But in this scripture, it says, better to be patient than powerful, better to have self-control than to conquer. And then I want to share this with you, and again, I don't read books, so if I've read it, it's simple. But it says, whether times are good or bad, sweet or raw, what we believe colors what we perceive, and how we believe determines what our faith produces. And it talks about resilient faith, and it says, resilient faith is the kind that will sustain us for life. It's a faith that does not change with the weather or weaken with times that get hard. Resilient faith holds up when hit by life's setbacks and curveballs. It chooses to follow the Savior no matter what. And kind of, I was talking with this gentleman over here in the red shirt before we started, and he asked me about my buckle. And this buckle represents the last ranch rodeo that we were able to win in Stillwater. And we've done some other ranch rodeos, but it clicked on me when I was talking with this gentleman. Satan wants us to cherish this buckle as a metaphor of this is the last buckle I'm ever going to win. And that's what life and science and the doctors were telling me of. This buckle's the last one, so it's special. God wants us to believe, appreciate this buckle till you win the next one, because I'll bless you with the next one. And that's the mentality this church has got to have. We've got to have as individuals. We've got to have as a whole. We've got to have, no matter if we're climbing on a green colt, we're climbing on a broke horse, or if we don't own a horse and you're climbing on a four-wheeler, you're getting in your car to go work. It doesn't matter what clothes we wear. It doesn't matter where we live. It doesn't matter anything. God loves us. I watched a young lady that was riding a really nice gray horse at Freedom, Oklahoma last night that broke her back about 2 months before me, and I don't know much about her story, but she hasn't physically gained as much back as I've been blessed with, but she was cleaning the arena last night, and she was working hard, and she's not feeling sorry for herself. There's another gentleman we've been blessed with that lives in Dodge City that endowed a horse in March, broke his back in two spots, similar to me, and he's making it work, and it's been inspiring. I wouldn't know those people if I didn't break my back. I wouldn't have a chance to stand here in front of you today if I hadn't broke my back. So it doesn't matter. I don't need to know why I broke my back, but I can tell you what God's doing with it. And I will share everything with you, but I want to tell you, and I'm going to close with this. I had the mentality of, all right, I'm going to bust hard and I'm going to get all my summer projects done. And then there was a bunch of stuff. I'll do it till fall, because before the March before I broke my back, we lost 2,600 acres in the Starbuck fire. And that seemed pretty stressful, but you know what? It wasn't that stressful. That's not that big a deal, but I put a lot of stuff, I'm going to wait till fall. I'm going to wait to do it till fall. Well, in fall, I was sitting in a wheelchair. In fall, when we weaned calves and we weaned colts, they parked me at the gate, and they did it for me. And I want to tell you, I don't know where you guys are at spiritually. Don't wait till fall, because I should have died July 27th. I should have left two little boys and Alyssa without a dad and without a husband. I'd have left a calf crop without me to take care of it. I took a lot of things for granted that God had blessed us with that I appreciated, but I appreciate 1,000 times more today. I appreciate stepping out of my pickup and be able to go to the bathroom in the middle of a county road. As honest as I can put that with you. There's a lot of things that are a big deal. I was able to go sort through some brood mares yesterday and go through them and show a buddy. And there was a slide picture that was really random, and it's a picture of a sale, horse sale, on our slideshow. That was a sale we were a part of in Laramie, Wyoming, that Alyssa and I shut the doors and told the nurses to leave us alone, and we were watching our colt sale last year. I'm blessed this year as we get to load horses, and I'm heading to Laramie, Wyoming, Wednesday morning, by God's grace. Those are little things that were like, no big deal, you just plan and do it. Now they're monumental things. And as I started walking up these steps, there'd have been getting my pickup was a big deal for a long time. Walking up these steps wouldn't have happened. Now they're no big deal. So I don't know what your challenge is. I don't know what your ditch is. You can't get out of it. But with God, we can. I wouldn't have got out of that ditch without help. The people that came and got me didn't ask me why I was there. Didn't ask me, how dumb are you? Why are you riding this horse? Why are you doing this? They didn't care. They showed up and helped. And I know there's a bunch of people in here. I'll give you my cell phone. Alyssa will give you her cell phone. We'll do whatever. We'll come meet, whatever. Don't worry about why you're in the ditch. Don't feel ashamed why you're in the ditch. Don't worry about what's going to happen. Suck it up and go let God take care of it. But we got to pull our part. If I hadn't have done my part, and if I'd had let Satan win, God would have saved my life. God would have made it available where I could walk, but I could have been lazy, and I would have been in my chair. And I'm not saying that to toot my own horn, but it's biblical. We've got to have faith, and we've got to have action, and that's what you've got to do. So I don't know where your hearts are at, but get them right before you leave today if it's not right. Line it out. I mean, and sometimes it feels like chasing that face like roping a baby calf, and I've never roped a baby calf that ran a straight line. Or they'll run straight until you swing, and then they go every right butt straight. Or if it's roping a slow, fat cow, I don't care what it is, where you're at on that path, go catch. And if you don't catch, throw it again. there's a lot of people in here. We'll help you. Get your head screwed on straight because we might not have tomorrow. And I always thought that was kind of silly of, man, we've got tomorrow. We'll plan it. We're young. God kicked me in the teeth and said, you might not have tomorrow. I'm not done with you today, but I don't know about tomorrow. And I don't know what his plans are tomorrow. And I take a passion in raising good horses and cattle, but they're not near as high on my priority list as they were. I still love looking at my calves and getting a uniform set of calves and looking at my horses, and I want them to be better. But playing with my boys, carrying my boy into my house is more important. Walking down the road a couple weeks ago, maybe last week, we took a half-mile walk halfway to where I got hurt and back, and that's more important. So I don't know what it is, and this book is more important. That resilient faith is more important, and it's simple. I can tell you, if I can have that faith and God saves me, he'll save you. He's got a plan for you. Make it happen. So.
Thanks for joining us at Thousand Hills. We pray your life was changed by what you heard. If you've made a commitment today, contact us at 580-216-6427 or check out our website at thousandhillsranch.church where you can give your tithes. Thank you again and have a great week.